The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
When the time has come for moving on, you can't go wrong.
Pointing You Home with Eric Stewart on WMAL.
Pointing You Home.
Now, here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Good morning. Welcome back to Pointing You Home, your number one local real estate news resource. Hey, at 8:30, we have the Senior Solutions Show discussing move managers and how they are here to help you. Welcoming Susie Danick from TAD Relocation, Donna Eichelberger from Graceful Transitions, and Mike Paxton, who you might know from the TV show Hoarders on Lifetime and the A&E Network. But first, where is the top summer travel destination this year? It is the Washington, D.C. area. Is that not interesting? We offer the number one named summer destination based on the travel costs, hotel and restaurant prices, and the attractions. A company called Wallet Hub studied over 100 large metropolitan areas, and they factored in the number of restaurants, some amusement parks, frozen yogurt shops, bike rental facilities, festivals, and so on, and they pinpointed the overall cheap spots that are also easiest to reach, according to, again, Wallet Hub. So this includes the District, Northern Virginia, and the Maryland suburbs, which this is kind of interesting. It edged out Orlando, Austin, Chicago, and Atlanta. Now, it does rank 84 out of 100 on the local costs, but Wallet Hub studies say that this area is easy to get to and features a ton of things to do, including a lot of free activities like going to the art museums or going to be a part of festivals on the mall or just getting, you know, 3 hours away and getting to the beach. There's lots here in this area, a lot of history, a lot of advantage to coming here. By the way, earlier this year, Money Magazine named Alexandria, Virginia, its number one travel destination in the United States. Speaking of destinations, if you're in the area this summer, stop by Pike and Rose. This is a new development that opened up within the last year and a half or so. There's a beach area at Pike and Rose that's opening up. They're bringing in 250 tons of sand to fill the space, essentially to provide a beach area for cocktails and host events and so on. It'll be open Fridays, Saturdays, serving snacks, beer, wine, and beach-themed cocktails like Orange Crush. So it'll be operated by Ridgewell's, well-respected business, and a Bethesda catering company that's been around since I was a kid. Used to drive those purple trucks around. Maybe they still do. So you can sit out on Adirondack chairs. You can walk across the street and go see a movie at the iPick or do anything you like. Plus, there's bowling nearby as well. I had a letter written to me just about two weeks ago now. And it came from the professor of economics, Anthony Yeezer. Hopefully, Anthony, I'm saying your name correctly. I'm going to read you this letter from him because I think it's helpful. As I was trying to explain mortgage-backed securities, Anthony heard some of the struggle that I had, and I loved what he wrote. The issue why mortgage interest rates on 30-year FRMs, fixed-rate mortgages, in other words, follow a 10-year versus a 30-year treasury. The answer for why, again, why do we figure out a 30-year mortgage is based on a 10-year treasury? The answer is what matters is the expected duration of a loan, not the term to maturity. For instance, if the average person was going to actually hold their mortgage for a full 30 years, you would see the interest rate be different. But most people hold their mortgages, and this is my input on this, for roughly 7 to 10 years. So the banks will hold a mortgage, they'll hold a mortgage, and they'll sell the treasury, and they'll make the spread between the two of these. So an amortizing 30-year mortgage, that a self-amortizing 30-year mortgage, one that where you pay it off over 30 years. At the beginning, you pay a lot more interest, and as you kill, amortize means to kill the mortgage over time, you pay off more and more each month. You also have the prepayment option, where you can prepay your mortgage and amortize it faster. When mortgages are priced, their returns are based on the return to securities of comparable duration. On average, the 30-year mortgage has duration characteristics much closer to a 10-year treasury. FRM duration is under, that's again fixed rate mortgage, under 10 years, and so rates tend to follow the 10-year treasury. If interest rates rise, mortgage duration becomes longer because prepayment is not attractive. Meaning if you're locked into a 3% or 3.5% or 4% interest and now rates are at 6%, you're not going to want to pay that mortgage off faster when you have a rate that's so much lower than what the market's offering. The second issue that I had was why there was an increase in treasury rates that would then result in a higher mortgage interest rate. Well, I kind of gave the answer away already. And he explained this to me, and I first time I've ever gotten this, really gotten this, banks hold the treasuries and mortgages as alternative assets. Treasuries are attractive because they have zero credit risk and are easily bought and sold, meaning they're very liquid. And accordingly, rates on treasuries are lower. But if a bank wants to hold more mortgages, it must sell some of the treasuries that it holds. Thus, the interest rate on the treasury is the opportunity cost that they're giving up to buy more mortgages. He hopes that this is useful. And he noted that there's really a lack of information about this to the general public. And he said, when I teach undergraduates, I have two favorite phrases. One, either you know economics or you're wrong. And two, very few people know economics. Thank you, Anthony Yeaser, professor of economics, for taking time out of your day to give me an education. If you're getting ready to buy a house, you should get a copy of our Buyer Savvy Guide. We'll help you through the process of finding the best mortgage lenders, real estate attorneys, and the home of your dreams at the Eric Stewart Group of Long & Foster. Call us today at 800-900-9104 or go to ericstewartgroup.com. Well, I'm excited to have Bobby Lee join me today. Wanted to talk with you about the recent storms the D.C. area has experienced. Last weekend, I read about the derecho potential, again, that we might have had. We didn't have it, thank God. As an attorney, a real estate attorney, what have you seen of late?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me, Eric. It's always a pleasure. So I think that's a great topic. You know, we've had a lot of tough weather this past 6 or 7 months with that windstorm and all the rain. And we've had a lot of downed trees recently, and also, you know, from back in, you know, in the beginning of the year from that windstorm. And, you know, it's affected a lot of homeowners. And what one of the main concerns for a lot of people right now is if you have your house on the market or if you are under contract to buy a house, what happens if a tree falls and does damage, or if simply if a tree falls? And it differs, the law differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So in Maryland and D.C., if your neighbor's tree falls on your house, it becomes your problem, even though it is the neighbor's tree. Virginia is a little bit more nuanced, where they take into consideration whether or not you, as the owner of the tree, properly maintain the tree. And if, you know, this were to go to litigation, if the tree wasn't properly maintained and the homeowner were negligent, then the homeowner could be held liable. So Maryland, D.C., if you've got a house that's that the tree fell and it's from the neighbor's yard, it falls on your yard, it's your problem. Another big issue too is with all the rain, the flooding. And, you know, whether we're talking about tree damage or storm damage in general or flooding, it's important to note that when you buy a house and you go under contract, seller has to deliver the property in a certain agreed upon condition under the contract. Typically, that means that the seller is going to deliver the property in the condition agreed to as of the date of the home inspection, if the parties agree to have the allow the buyer to conduct a home inspection. What that then means is that any damage or any change in condition to the property between the home inspection and the date of settlement is the responsibility of the seller itself, himself or herself, even if it wasn't something that was identified in the home inspection. And I actually had that on a few settlements this past week where, with all the record rains we had, the basement flooded, or maybe there was drains, outdoor drains that were clogged and caused some water damage issues. And in one particular case, they actually had to delay the settlement to this week to allow the basement to dry out and repair the damage.
That's not surprising that you have to deliver the property in substantially the same condition as at the time of purchase. And let's add to that a post-settlement occupancy where the owner of the property, who's now no longer the owner, is renting the property back for 30, 60 days, let's say. During that window of time, there's a water penetration issue. Is it the owner's, the new owner's responsibility or the previous owner's responsibility to deliver the property in substantially the same condition at the end of the vacancy period of a post-settlement occupancy?
Eric, that's a great question, and it's actually a question that even a lot of real estate agents don't understand. If you use the required board certified, the local realtor board certified post-settlement occupancy agreement, It specifically provides in there that the seller will deliver the property in the condition agreed upon under the contract. So whether we're talking about storm-related, weather-related issues, or simply the air conditioner broke during the post-settlement occupancy period, it is still the seller's responsibility. In other words, the seller can't hold their hands up and say, hey, it's not my house anymore, I'm just a tenant now. It is still the seller's responsibility to deliver the property that he or she had agreed to under the contract originally when they ratified and at the time of settlement.
It's fascinating. I had a tree fall in a house in Oakton about 3.5 months ago during that windstorm, and the sellers are going through a $250,000 renovation of that home. The buyer backed out. It was a tree on their own property, and the devastation obviously was great. Hopefully, what we're hoping is that when we're done with the renovations, we'll sell the house for more because they're going to get all kinds of new stuff, but it has been nothing short of difficult for them. I'm sure there are other homeowners listening who can relate to that. Bobby Lee is with Sage Title, and Sage Title is one of the premier title companies in the D.C. area. Bobby, what's your website?
www.sagetitlegroup.com.
Bobby Lee can be found at sagetitlegroup.com. Pleasure to be with you, Bobby.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you very much.
Kathy Smale from the Eric Stewart Group coming up next on WMAL.
This is Pointing You Home on WMAL.
Welcome back to Pointing You Home, your number one local real estate resource on the radio. I'm Eric Stewart of Long & Foster Realtors, here the host of Pointing You Home each and every Sunday, and have been now 14 years I've been on the air. Thank you for joining me. Well, we had quite a slew of properties go under contract the last few weeks, and I want to share a couple of experiences that we had, plus mention a few homes that are currently up for sale. We sold properties with multiple contracts, in some cases for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 above the asking price. In other cases, full price. In some cases, some negotiation off of the full price. But all in all, our average sale price is probably over 100% for the last few weeks. That means that the price that we were asking and the price we sold it for, turns out we sold for more. Been great. If you're thinking of buying a home and you're looking out in Clifton, Virginia, let me remind you of a home on 12810 Wickland Drive. It's a colonial with 4,982 square feet. Listed currently for $1,100,000. 5-bedroom, 4.5 baths. Fabulous home. Definitely take a look at ericstewartgroup.com. Up in Gaithersburg, up in the Darnestown area, 12249 McDonald Chapel Drive near the Kentlands, $1.1 million, 4-bedroom, 4.5 bath, 5,500 square feet above grade, plus a full basement. Ready for purchasing a home that has been completely built from scratch, a 4,000-square-foot single-family home for $1,400,000 in the Churchill School District and in the Regency Estates subdivision. Check it out at ericstewartgroup.com. If you haven't seen, we've got several properties that are on the coming soon section, including a home that's backing up to the golf course over at Manor Country Club. If you're thinking about buying and want to get a listing before it actually comes on the market, go to ericstewartgroup.com and you can find all of our quiet listings listed there. One home that we put under contract quickly in Burke, Virginia at 10605 Burnside Landing sold very quickly and was listed for $725,000. Also on Cherry Bend Court, which is in Germantown, and out in Horner Road, which is a Cape Cod single-family home in Prince William County, which we put up for $365,000, sold it very, very quickly. Great opportunities abound for you if you're thinking about selling and would like to talk to the Eric Stewart Group. You can find us at ericstewartgroup.com. Download our market-ready guide to get your home ready to sell, too. Hey, let's turn our attention to buying a house with Kathy Smale. Kathy's a member of the Eric Stewart Group. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Eric.
Kathy, you specialize in working with buyers that come into the group wanting to purchase homes. Tell us about how you work with buyers.
Well, as you know, in today's market, the real estate, there are many agents out there that you are competing with, and it's very important to make yourself as an agent stand out among the competition and offer something of value to your clients.
Like what?
I think that is the most important thing. So as I meet with buyers during a buyer consultation, the very first thing that I like to do is to develop a relationship with them. I want these buyers to feel that they can trust me.
Good.
And that I'm going to negotiate the best possible deal for them through many different vehicles of the buying process.
Through many
Yes.
different vehicles.
Okay. Yes.
It's not just one. It's not just price.
No, it's not just price. I spend time going through home inspections, trying to negotiate the best possible deals with them in terms of what the seller would be taking care of. I set the expectation. We also try to negotiate additional money during a home inspection for things that maybe a seller is not interested in participating in. I work with preferred lenders who I work discounts on settlement fees.
Right.
And I think that every aspect of the buying process I'm able to negotiate, whether it's down to getting you a discount on the reissue rate of your title policy, insurance policy, which I think is really important to know, and that's something you can get from the seller. So there's a lot of different variables that go into negotiating the best possible price for my clients.
Okay, so working with the buyer, your attention is on relationship and negotiating best advantage in the process.
Yes.
Excellent. How do you win a contract when you're in a multiple contract scenario?
The first thing that I do is once I identify the property that my client would like to purchase and put an offer in, I start the relationship with the listing agent. I think it is very important for that listing agent to know who I am, that I'm going to register an offer with them. And at that point, I have a conversation with my buyers to find out how serious they are about this home, have some skin in the game in their offer, and I educate them on what's going on in the market. So this past spring market, we've been experiencing a lot of multiple offers. And if my clients are not educated to know how they have to win that offer, they're going to lose out. And I've had buyers that have lost out on four different offers because they didn't have the skin in the game and understand that you need to possibly escalate over list price in a multiple offer situation.
So you'll educate them, but they have to listen.
They have to listen.
And when you say skin in the game, what does that mean? They don't have skin in the game.
That means that if they're not willing to win their offer, that means that they're really not interested in this home.
So win that offer means come in with the
offer
will win the property, meaning using an escalation clause or coming in with the right terms, doing a pre-inspection, a variety of different tools in your toolbox that you use to help them get the house if they're willing to do what you tell them.
Correct.
Okay, fantastic. So what's the integrity and the quality of your ethic, Kathy, and where does that come from in your life?
I would say that one of the things I do talk about in my buyer consultation meeting with them is that I have a very high standard for myself. And with that standard, I feel very strongly in telling them that I take pride in being an honest, fair, and ethical agent. And I hold that standard very high.
What does ethical mean to you?
It means that I'm honest with them, that I'm following the rules, and I'm making sure that I'm upfront with them on everything.
Okay. So ethics, really defined by the National Association of Realtors and Northern Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., is really, first of all, to the public, to treat the public in a way that the public would expect. You're going to follow rules and treat them fairly, honestly, and ethically. You're going to follow the rules. But we also have a responsibility to fellow real estate agents to follow rules. And we discussed that in our sales meeting as a team last week. When we talked about ethics with other agents, what's an example of how you would treat another agent ethically in a multiple contract scenario?
Well, my first reaction would be to treat them fairly as well in the process here and mm-hmm. hope that they would be treating me fairly. And, you know, I've been through this, you know, recently where I have felt that some agents may not have the same high priority in that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to work around a little bit of that in my position as a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm. Now, that accountability as real estate agents, when you're working with another real estate agent, maybe you don't feel it has the same quality of ethics that you have, right? That can be a challenge. So the best tools that I think we found at the Eric Stewart Group when we're working with buyers to represent a buyer on a purchase is to know the other real estate agent. That is to build, as you said, building a relationship with a buyer, but it's also important that we build an agent relationship with the other real estate agent on the listing side when we're representing a buyer. So that means that we're contacting the other agent, we're asking for a commitment from the other agent to be honest and fair with us the way we would want to be with them, right?
Correct.
And in a multiple contract scenario, sometimes an agent will be tempted to take an offer without getting all of the offers in time. So you, by building a relationship with other real estate agents, the listing agent in this case, you'll get confidence that your offer will be presented, that you'll know how many offers there are, and you'll be able to win the war for your buyer.
And that is the end game right there.
Right there at the end of the day.
Yes.
It's about putting their name on the mailbox.
Yes.
Kathy Smale is our agent of the month at the Eric Stewart Group, and we're grateful to have her on the show today. Thank you, Kathy. If you'd like to contact Kathy, you can find her and all of us at ericstewartgroup.com or call us toll-free at 800-900-9104 and ask for Kathy. She'll help you out. If you're on the go constantly like I am, or maybe you find yourself available tonight at 9:30, you can find Real Estate Now, my national real estate show, streaming on your favorite podcast platform or right here on WMAL tonight at 9:30. Find us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Google Play, Radio Public, and TuneIn. Hey, coming up next, Senior Solutions Real Estate Show. Stay tuned.
The Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.